Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is the Athletic FC podcast weekend preview. We're going to look ahead to Euro 2024 with a particular focus on two of the favourites, France and England. I'm Michael Bailey, and alongside me is our England correspondent, Jack Pitt-Brook, who will be covering the Three Lions at this summer's tournament. For the French angle, we have PSG, brackets, and Fulham writer Peter Rutzler. And finally, for a neutral view of the cold, hard numbers, it's Tom Harris. It's lovely to have you all here. As we stand, England and France are the bookies' favourites to lift the Henri Delaunay Cup on July the 14th. But I'm sure Germany, Spain, Portugal, and defending champions Italy, maybe some others too, will fancy their chances. So let's crack on, starting with the Three Lions. It is, of course, the March international break, so we have fixtures and preparations. And for England, who we'll start with, they've got two friendly matches for Gareth Southgate's side. They're at Wembley, they're against Brazil on Saturday the 23rd, and then Belgium 3 days later on the 26th. Gareth Southgate has named a 26-man squad for these friendlies. That will, of course, be whittled down to 23 players come the tournament in June. So let's look at that squad and the notable inclusions. One that was quite late in terms of Kobbie Mainoo. Jack, any of those names in the squad or perhaps the inclusion of Mainoo sort of stick out to you?
I think the fact that Southgate is still looking at inexperienced players this close to Euros is itself really revealing, because it shows that he's determined to keep learning about players for this tournament and possibly even with an eye on what comes after the Euros. It would have been easier, perhaps, for him to just choose experienced players and keep looking at guys who he's had in the England group over the last few years. And he hasn't done that. So I think there's a lot to be said for the inclusions of Konsa, Branthwaite, Mainoo, even players who've been involved a little bit, like Tony's obviously got one cap, Cole Palmer's got two caps, and all those guys are now in contention to kind of make their case for inclusion on the plane to Germany.
Ivan Toney's an interesting one, because for me, he isn't necessarily in particularly good form. He has obviously been out and not played a lot this season as well, but was involved beforehand. So you can kind of see where that's come back again. And then you have players like Cole Palmer, who's been a sensation this season. And I'm so delighted he's actually in this squad to prove a bit more about himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing is that England do already have quite a few kind of left-footed, creative winger-type players like Cole Palmer. So obviously Bukayo Saka's out there. Phil Foden can play on that right-hand side and drift into the middle. But yeah, you're right. He's definitely played himself into the squad at the very least. And I mean, just looking at the numbers, you know, from the Chelsea team alone, he's the club's top scorer this season across all competitions, 14 goals, the top assister with 12. So that's 26 goal contributions in around 30 full games this season, which is pretty extraordinary. Leads away for shots, chances created, passes into the penalty area, through balls. He's up there for take-ons, progressive carries. He's just quite amazing, really. The fact that he's played so little for City before moving to Chelsea and just kind of seamlessly like assuming this role in a team which is so kind of expensively assembled as well. It's really incredible.
That's a good point, really. It's quite a dysfunctional team at times as well. So is the Chelsea team a better team than an England first choice 11?
He's obviously done so well coming out of City, having not played those games, gone into Chelsea, which is now, well, can I say this, a mid-table team. I've got the Fulham link with the reporting, so...
Get that dig in, Pete.
but it's true, you know, it's not been an easy period at Chelsea. The pressure there, the amount of change that they've had there, and to be the guy who's carrying them, says a lot about how well he is performing. And you know, those numbers do speak for themselves. To produce that in that environment speaks well about what he could do, particularly in an England setup where it's a whole new level of pressure.
Jack, you were at the England media day on Wednesday. How was that? Who did you get to hear from?
Yeah, it was good. So Joe Gomez spoke. Obviously, this is the first time he's been in England squad for years. Southgate's been a big fan of him for a long time, but injuries have got in the way a bit. But he was back. Anthony Gordon spoke. He's someone who's trying to stake a claim with his fantastic form for Newcastle United. And then we also spoke to Jarrad Branthwaite, who is in his first England group. It was really interesting hearing from him. You know, he talked to us about how he nearly had to give up football at the age of 15 when he was just a teenager at Carlisle United, had really bad tendonitis in his knee, couldn't play for 18 months, was only offered a four-week trial where he could prove whether he was fit enough for a scholarship, at which point he was thinking, this isn't going to work out for me. But his parents pushed him to do the trial. He did well on the trial, got a scholarship, got a professional contract, and then a few months later got his big transfer to Everton, which is just a reminder of how even for players who are now in the England squad and shining in the Premier League, it's often been a very difficult route to get there.
Yeah, too true. The players that haven't made it, in terms of this squad at least, I guess the key ones there are Calvin Phillips and Raheem Sterling. I mean, we've already spoken about Chelsea already. I don't know. To me, there is a really interesting piece on Raheem Sterling written by our Chelsea writer, Liam Toomey, which is definitely worth the read. But that kind of feels like done now. He hasn't been in the England squad for a fair while. Calvin Phillips is interesting because he made his West Ham move, Pete, essentially to get back into contention. I mean, the fact that that has not gone well is probably worse for him than had he still been sat on the sidelines at Man City almost.
Yeah, it's curious that it's at this point where he's now out of Man City, he's, you know, into an environment where he's going to be playing more, that it's now that he's dropped out of Southgate's squad and the thinking. It's an interesting one because, you know, Southgate's spoken a lot about how there isn't the same depth in that number six position. He wants someone to hold that role. And you would think that if he can find some form, if he can get some momentum, it wouldn't take too much to get back into the setup. He's the right kind of profile that he's after, and I think there may be a bit of frustration there as well, because obviously there's Declan Rice, and Declan Rice is world leading as a six, but we've seen him for Arsenal play a bit more box to box, with a bit more verticality, scoring goals, and you kind of need someone to release him in that way, and that's why you'd want someone as Phillips as almost an option to rotate in those positions. So yeah, I think I'm sure there'd be some frustration. I'm sure Jack can speak more about it, that he's not available just because of the lack of options in that six role.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? This question of how best to use Rice. Because traditionally, obviously, Rice has been a six for England. That's when, you know, when he first came into the team in 2019, I think that was, the question was, is he going to be a defensive midfielder or a centre-back? And so six was where he initially fitted into the England team. And the idea, you know, he had like Henderson or back then, more, you know, even Lingard or Dele would be playing in front of him, who could push forward a bit more. But as Pete says, the more he impresses with his kind of box-to-boxness at Arsenal, his ability to score goals, his amazing physicality where he can really dominate opponents in their own half, I think the question does become, like, is playing as six the best thing for Declan Rice for England? Or could they bring in another six to get him to push forward? The problem with this, is that there isn't really another obvious number six who can do that. Like, Phillips has kind of played himself out of contention a little bit because he struggled at West Ham. Mainoo is an exciting option, but obviously incredibly inexperienced. It would be a big thing to throw him in. Henderson is kind of still in the picture, having got his move to Ajax from Saudi Arabia, but I don't think anybody knows really exactly where Henderson's level is at the moment. So it's a difficult one, but it's exactly the kind of dilemma that Southgate needs this international window so he can try and come up with some answers.
Absolutely right. And this does factor into what we were going to do now. I was going to ask you guys for your ideal 11s, who you'd like to pick for England's opening Euro 2024 match, which is against Serbia on the 16th of June. And it's kind of a fun exercise, really. Because you figure out where the problems are and maybe where the strengths and weaknesses are, Tom.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy this, to be honest. And I don't envy Gareth Southgate at the start of his tournament. But obviously, international football as well, it's about individual games and it's about preparing specifically for the opponents that you're going to play. So sometimes setups will be, you know, more, for example, you might want a more attacking midfield setup. You might want one which can absorb pressure and then hit on the break. All really depends what he's thinking. But I mean, for me, the back five is kind of the easiest to pick, apart from maybe one of the centre-backs. I think it has to be Jordan Pickford for me. just because of the experience that he has in the England squad. And obviously Aaron Ramsdale has had his ups and downs this season. He's obviously a very talented goalkeeper, but I think Pickford is the one for me. Luke Shaw at left back, and I'd say Kyle Walker, I think, at right back. Just, again, in my team that I'm picking, it's quite a heavily kind of attacking left-sided team. So I'd want Walker as a kind of right-sided centre-back when England have the ball in the pressing forward. And then a two centre-backs, John Stones, and I've actually gone for Jared Branthwaite just because of... I mean, there's a really good article on The Athletic actually by Jacob Whitehead, who kind of outlines how brilliant he's been in terms of winning duels, in terms of progressive passing and all of that kind of thing. He's left-footed and he fits well on the left as well. So I think that's my back five.
Anyone going to complain with the back issues there? We're going to break it into bits, obviously, at this point.
So I would have Maguire over Branthwaite. I think that Maguire has been so consistent for Southgate and in tournaments especially. And I think that ultimately will decide Southgate's mind for him. At left back, I mean, I like Shaw, but I'm personally not very optimistic about him playing enough football for Manchester United at the end of the season to be fit. England don't have a lot of good options at left back. I think Chilwell, I mean, we'll have to wait and see how Chilwell does over the back end of the season with Chelsea. To be honest, I wouldn't be that surprised if he goes back for Kieran Trippier, who he has played a fair bit at left back over the years. I know he's not enjoying his best season with Newcastle United, but I do think that Southgate will kind of be guided, I think, by tournament experience and by the players he can trust. So, and if it comes down to a coin flip between Chilwell and Trippier, my sense is he'd go for Trippier.
Yeah, pretty much the same, to be honest. I think Maguire will be the choice. Do I want Maguire? I think England's a different environment, it's a different setup. So I like the idea of Branthwaite coming in and moving John Stones to the right side. I agree with Jack about Shaw. I think the left back's interesting because left back was always such a strong position for England. And I think if you've got Chilwell, who's injured frequently, Shaw is more a form question. I think Jack's right. It's interesting that that's now potentially a problem. It may not be, but let's see. But yeah, I think Tom's overall quite right. It seems settled, even though I think it's probably one of the most debated positions. And I wonder if someone like Konsa or Branthwaite can make an impact, even if there is that short amount of time before the tournament.
I guess there's a difference between getting to a tournament and competing in it and then actually having real hopes of winning it in terms of the experience you call on or not. Midfield, I mean, Mainoo feels like a player that has a really good opportunity to stake a claim here because, as you say, the lack of maybe covering midfielders, and I presume we're all playing Jude Bellingham in a kind of a 10 role.
Yeah, so I think two of the three, assuming we've got three in the midfield, I think two of them don't even need to be talked about, and they're Bellingham and Rice. They will definitely, definitely, definitely start every game for England at the Euros. Who you have alongside them, I think it kind of depends on what... It's not even so much about like the quality of the player. It's about what sort of a player do you want in there? Do you want, you know, we talked about, do you want a number six to release Rice to go forward? Do you want someone who can create more chances like a Madison? Do you want more physical energy like a Gallagher? Do you want Alexander-Arnold in midfield, which is something that South... I mean, Alexander-Arnold isn't in this squad, but that is something that Southgate has tried at a point since the Qatar World Cup. And I wonder whether... The answer, I mean, there isn't really an answer to this question because I think it will probably depend on what sort of opponents England are playing. Like, is it a game against, I don't know, a Denmark or a Serbia in the group where it's all about trying to unpick a really organised opponent? Or is it a game against, I don't know, France, for example, where England got picked apart by Antoine Griezmann in the World Cup quarterfinal in 2022? And they're probably thinking they do want a bit more physicality in the form of a Phillips or a Henderson.
So is that just a get out?
Yeah, basically. I've spoken for about 4 minutes there, not answered the question at all.
Beautifully done. Beautifully done, Jack. How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I'm very much along the same lines. I mean, I'm wondering even if Phil Foden could maybe play in that midfield, and that allows Marcus Rashford to take the left-sided attacking spot. And that is a kind of ultra-attacking option if we're playing a team who we're looking to pen in and really have someone in between the lines like Foden. He's so good at kind of receiving it in tight spaces and drifting away from pressure. But yeah, it's really tricky. But Rice, Bellingham, and I think I would go maybe for James Maddison if I'm forced to pick one. But yeah, it depends on the game, I think.
Similar thinking to you actually there, Tom. I like the idea of having Bellingham and Foden, and I like the idea of Foden playing centrally because I think we've seen for City for long spells this season how effective he can be there. But then, yes, that allows Rashford to play, but Rashford's form has been up and down this season. I think you need I think having someone like Rashford on that left-hand side who can cut in and take advantage of the spaces that Kane can leave has quite a nice balance. But as you say, it's quite forward-thinking. I would really have liked to have seen Trent in that role, really see how that would have progressed. I'm one of those who, you know, we look at the two best teams in England, Liverpool and City, and the way they set up their teams and the way that they use defenders like John Stones stepping into midfield or Trent stepping into midfield. And you kind of want England to reflect that. You want England to reflect the best that the Premier League has to offer. And I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if England necessarily have the defensive players to cover in that role. I know we talked about, so look at the ones I've got. So Walker, Maguire, Shaw as a free, say, and then you had Stone stepping in, and then maybe that can release Rice a little bit and you get a box, and that might suit Bellingham. It might suit Foden, play with more freedom. But then that might even be a question about Southgate and whether he can do that, whether he wants to do that, whether he's able to do that. And I think that maybe this is a separate topic, but that might be part of why there is that sort of criticism of Southgate, thinking, is he able to do it?
I was at the England-Australia friendly at the back end of last year, and he did do that with Trent Alexander-Arnold, and he was allowed to push more forward, obviously, in that environment. And England roared on to an amazing 1-0 win in a dead friendly. So he is obviously trying it. You get such limited opportunities to do it, of course. The other thing I noticed from that first half was James Maddison was playing in that game, but so was Grealish, and it all got very cloggy. And I fear there's so many great ball-playing players that can happen, maybe, if it's not quite right and the chemistry's not there. And that does make me think about James Maddison, because I love him as a player, but you kind of wonder if he gets a little bit pushed out of this, maybe.
He was incredible in those first 10 games of the season. Like, he really hit the ground running and looked like he'd been playing for Tottenham for years. But he then suffered that bad ankle injury in the game against Chelsea in November, which put him out for almost 3 months, which I think makes it the worst injury he's ever had. And since then, he's had some good moments. You know, he scored a fantastic goal away at Villa Park, where he really showed his athleticism to get on the end of a cross from Saar. He had some really good moments, actually, in the game against Fulham, where Spurs overall were pretty bad. I still think we're waiting to see the kind of Maddison of the autumn again now, although there's still a lot of football left this season, so I hope there's no reason he can't get back to that level. Where he fits in for England, I don't know. I mean, for Spurs, he obviously plays as an attacking number 8 in a 4-3-3 system, and he's given quite a lot of license. But I just don't think, I mean, Southgate and Postecoglou are just quite different tactically, so I don't think I would be surprised if Southgate allows him to replicate his Tottenham position for England. I mean, recently for England, I think we've seen Maddison playing from the left, like in a kind of Grealish-y type role. And my sense is that Maddison's role for England is a kind of alternative to Bellingham as a 10, an alternative to Grealish or Foden out on the left, rather than being somebody who can be trusted right in the middle of the pitch.
Is Maddison sort of the player you want to build around, right? You want your forward line to have him on the ball to dictate things, to control things. And I think with England, you've got Bellingham in such fantastic form, and you've got Phil Foden in there. There comes a point where you've got so many that you can't really just...
Yeah, you can't play everyone.
...have that influence.
And yeah. I think one of the best things about Southgate is he's quite clear-headed about the idea that you can't just squeeze in all your best and most popular, most famous players. Like, for years, England managers have failed in large part because they've thought, well, you know, we've got to get Wayne Rooney in somewhere. Let's play him midfield, like Hodgson did in Euro 2016, and it was a disaster. Or the whole like Lampard and Gerrard stuff. So I do think one thing I really trust Southgate on is his ability to know what makes a good international team and pick the players accordingly, rather than thinking, you know, what players do people like, and then trying to reverse engineer a team around that.
Any bits, Pete, Tom, that we're missing from your 11? So are we all covered off? Harry Kane, obviously up top, presuming he's fit. Fingers crossed, everybody in England. And anyone else in the 11 that we haven't mentioned, or are we all covered off?
I think Bukayo Saka's.
That was the name I was plugging for there, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic for Arsenal, part of a team that's competing at the top end of the Premier League. And I suppose the left side is the sort of the more open one. I think if with form, you'd just put Rashford in there, but you've got Foden that can play there. You've got a list of players. You mentioned Maddison as well.
I think it feels to me pretty locked to be Kane through the middle with Saka and Foden either side of him. Saka's played almost every game for England, really, since he came into the team during the Euros last time 3 years ago. And Foden has played more and more and more for England on that left-hand side. It's funny, really, because that really shows the evolution of the team more than anything, because, you know, for, for years, it was Kane and Sterling, or sometimes, depending on the formation, Kane, Sterling and Rashford. Then there was a huge kind of public campaign to get Grealish in during the last Euros, and he did get in. And he went to the World Cup, but didn't really shine at the World Cup. And now, you know, the personnel have changed to the point that really I think it's Foden and Saka are locked in as starters either side of Kane. And then Rashford and Grealish are maybe even competing for one spot in the squad. Sterling unlikely to be involved at all. So it's been a big change in the guard.
Yeah, and I do like the options that England have off the bench as well in these kind of situations, because like you say, if that is the front three that's locked in, you've got Cole Palmer sat on the bench, who actually as well, 9 out of 9 penalties in his professional career, so maybe that's something that could come into play. Ivan Toney as well, we've all spoken about his penalty record, so there are ways that Southgate can switch things up mid-game and in kind of tight contests, and I think that's always a good thing.
I love the idea of Palmer as a kind of game-changing substitute. I think he's got exactly the right skills to do that. Like, England have got one problem that England have had over the years, and it's not quite so bad now, is they don't really have that many players apart from Kane and Sterling who can score goals. Like, even like Grealish has played a lot of times for England. He's not really scored that many big goals. I can't really remember him scoring any big goals for England. Whereas Palmer's got such an incredible, like, innate knack of knowing where the ball's going to drop in the box, like a kind of real technical mastery of all sorts of different types of finishes. I think he's exactly the kind of player, if we're sort of gummed up 0-0 against Slovenia or whatever, and they need something a little bit different, I think Palmer, you know, ahead of Grealish, maybe even ahead of Rashford, depending on form and fitness, is the guy who you would throw on, who would somehow just magic something up in the final third.
First big question that I'm going to ask at this point is, do we all agree that England can win this tournament?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, of course they can.
Will they?
Wow, that's a very, very different question. I think they have, I would probably make them favourites, yeah. I mean, but obviously, like, the favourites for a tournament has what? Tom, you know this, like a 20% chance, 30% chance of winning?
Yeah.
How would you rank them in percentage terms?
I mean, yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? It's just because it's so game by game. I mean, you look at the last World Cup, obviously France were the favourites. England were also in there as well. That quarterfinal went the way of France, and then the final goes the way of Argentina. It's all so just big, big games. And those are more or less 50-50 in those kind of occasions. So over the course of a tournament, yeah, it comes down to who draws who when they play each other and the kind of tactical decisions within those games.
And I've already mentioned it once, but I can't help thinking, like, Italy only just scraped by in terms of qualification, yet the fact that they've kind of won it before, you're like, you know, England have won one major tournament in history. But maybe that's just my psychological bias that it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think experience matters. I know it gets talked about a lot, but, you know, England have been to a semi-final, been to a final of the Euros. You've got a squad there that's had that know-how, that nous, even at the younger age groups as well. Yeah, the coach who's had that experience, you would hope that by being there in that environment, experiencing it, can make that little difference that can be the difference in these individual games, because it's knockout football, isn't it? You could just get a red card after 10 minutes and then you've got a David Beckham incident and then you go out. So, like, it's one of those, isn't it? So in terms of, you know, you look at the quality that England have, and we just talked about Cole Palmer, is it almost a new option, I suppose, that England now have as well. He's one of many that they can turn to, particularly in those forward areas, to change games, to win games when they're not going right. And that makes England a real, real favourite.
England are in Group C and they will face Slovenia, Denmark and Serbia, who, am I right, Pete, you covered the Serbia in the World
Cup? I did.
Cup.
I did. Yeah, I did a nice big feature on Alexander Mitrovic, who duly left Fulham for Saudi Arabia.
Oh, what did you write in it? no, I'm not saying it's your fault. Is that a really tricky first game, do you feel?
Serbia have multiple issues with major tournaments. A country that has a lot of talent, particularly in forward areas, but then seem to fail to deliver. I mean, even at the World Cup, you know, they had some fantastic players across their squad, defence, midfield, Milinkovic-Savic, Mitrovic in attack with Vlahovic, Jovic. They're a difficult team, but they just don't seem to put it together in tournaments. So because of that unknown, you probably don't really want them. But
Gareth Southgate is contracted until December. So in theory, this could be his last tournament. What is your feeling at the moment that could happen after this tournament in terms of both England and Southgate?
I think it depends a lot on how England do. So Southgate was speaking about this on Thursday at the squad announcement at Wembley. And he said that they have consciously shelved all contract talks before the Euros because he thinks that you know, if it becomes a big story about his future, will he, won't he sign a new contract? He's worried that that will dominate the whole preparation for the tournament. He doesn't want the players to get distracted. He doesn't want the players to get asked about it, I imagine, which is what would happen if this was the story dominating the tournament. So no talk about the future until afterwards. I do think, look, I think I've sensed like that the FA would like him to stay on, as in to sign a new deal that would take him to the 2026 World Cup. I think the better England do, the likelier it is that he will sign. I think if they win it or come close to winning it, I'm sure he would want to be there in the US to try and win that World Cup. If they're bad, which I don't think will happen, but we've got to be prepared for the possibility that they're bad. If they're bad, I think the public reaction, regardless of what the FA might think, I think the public reaction would be so angry, because ultimately I think the public is turning a little bit, or has gradually turned against Southgate over the last few years. I think the public reaction would effectively make the minds up for them, and that would be the end of it. So yeah, it's all to be decided in Germany, really.
Another little subplot, quite a big one actually. Right, let's turn our attention to France.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
France, then, they will be one of the strongest teams in the competition. Clearly, they've won the Euros twice, in 1984 and 2000. They were a penalty shootout away from winning the World Cup in 2022, and that would have meant them retaining their title from 2018. I think they have all the experience I would request of a team that could go very close. They've got friendlies coming up against Germany and Chile over the next week or so. Didier Deschamps still in charge. Peter, how are they looking?
They're looking pretty good. No major surprises, at least coming into this international break, in terms of the squad. Kingsley Coman's out at the moment with a slight knee injury, but you'd imagine that when he returns, he'd come back in. Moussa Diaby of Aston Villa's got the nod, his first call-up for a year. There was talk potentially of Bradley Barcola, who's been excellent for PSG, getting his first call-up. He's with the 21s. It feels like with Deschamps that he's been there for 12 years now. I think coming into this tournament, he has a good idea of his squad. There's so much experience across that team. They know how to win tournaments. They know how to go deep in tournaments. They have a world-class forward in Kylian Mbappe. But it's a France squad that's changed. So there's only 9 players in this current international break squad that were in France's Euro squad. That kind of underlines the changes that have been made. There's no N'Golo Kante anymore. There's no Paul Pogba, of course. Hugo Lloris is retired. There's some big changes as well. And they've got a new generation coming through as well. The likes of Warren Zaïre-Emery, the youngest. He's come into the squad. His first cap in November, scored. Phenomenal midfield player. And that's joining a midfield that's already got Tchouaméni, Camavinga, Rabiot as well. So... all in all, yeah, they're in a good spot, and they absolutely breezed qualifying. Won nearly every game and then drew with Greece 2-2 and just sort of ruined it, which would have been quite a nice, you know.
I mean, on paper, are the squads quite evenly matched between France and England? Would you want to put
one down is stronger than the other?
I think where France will probably have the edges in defence, but even then, you still have a few question marks about what their squad will look like. Right back's been a bit of a question mark for France. During the last international break, it was Jules Koundé and Jonathan Klaus. The two of them have both been called up for this break as well, but neither have had amazing winters. Koundé in particular struggled at Barcelona. Deschamps prefers Benjamin Pavard as a centre back now rather than the right back. But there's depth, you know, there is depth in those positions. Kanate's come back into the squad. Pavard's back after injury. William Saliba, of course, who's central to Arsenal. I think we saw his influence at the back end of last season and how much they missed him. He's established himself now. So has Dayot Upamecano. They've got a lot of options. Luca Hernandez can play at centre-back as well. His brother Teo Hernandez can play. So, yes. Are they equivalent? Yeah, I think that's probably the problem area. And I suppose you might go, oh, they're still using Olivier Giroud as a centre-forward. But Olivier Giroud is France's all-time leading goal scorer and remains incredibly consistent for his country. Still playing for Milan. And they have options if he doesn't play as well.
France's group is a bit tricky and it's not complete yet. Group D, they have drawn Austria and the Netherlands and then one other, which will be figured out over this international break through the playoffs, which is very exciting, obviously. Tom, do you see France as your favourites?
Marginally over England. Again, it's very tricky, but I just think that star factor of Mbappe, I mean, we saw it in the World Cup final, which obviously they didn't go on to win, but he scored that hat-trick just out of nowhere, really. England obviously have Kane and Saka, but to perform at that level, at that kind of occasion, I think Mbappe is probably one of the only players in the world alongside Messi at the time who can do that kind of thing. And yeah, like Peter was saying, I love the kind of flexibility that we have in defence as well. I think Saliba and Kanate is an amazing partnership. Teo Hernandez is a very attacking left back. They've got Pavard who can kind of play a more kind of centre back, punching passes through the lines kind of role, who's done that really well at Inter Milan. And yeah, I'm very excited for Zaire Emery, actually. You mentioned him, Peter. You've probably seen quite a lot of him at PSG, but he looks really, really exciting as well.
I'm already getting excited about the summer. I'm loving this. If you thought a week of internationals would mean no trivia, you're wrong. For this one, we're going to give you two international players, and you have to guess which player has more caps for their country. So you're going to get two each, and you need to tell me which player has the most or more caps for their country. Makes sense? Pretty straightforward, isn't it? Jack, I'm going to come to you first.
Okay.
You lucky guy. This is England. Marcus Rashford or Gareth Southgate?
Marcus Rashford.
And you would be right. Do you have a guess at the number?
I would guess...
No points, but...
I would guess Rashford has in the region of 50 to 60, and I would put Southgate in the region of 30 to 40.
Oh, now you're just showing off. Rashford, yes, was correct. 59 caps. Gareth Southgate, 57.
Oh, wow.
So producer Mike made sure they were particularly tight.
Tight. That was closer than I thought.
Which bodes well. Peter, I'm going to come to you next. It's England again. Danny Welbeck or Michael Carrick?
That's Danny Welbeck, isn't it? Danny Welbeck played so often and Carrick didn't.
It is Danny Welbeck with
oh, I don't know.
He doesn't know. 42. You don't have to
understand. And Carrick something size. Ridiculously low, like 15 or something, isn't it?
It's not
isn't
quite.
That the great scandal that Carrick didn't play more?
Well, 34.
34. Oh, well, okay.
So it depends on your definition of 34 more than us lot. Tom, England once again. Robbie Fowler or Ian Wright?
I don't know.
I think I've got this one. I've seen all the answers, so I can't guess.
I'll say Robbie Fowler.
It's Ian Wright.
Oh,
Ian Wright, right, with 33. Who I always remember for... Oh, no, I'm going to say something that's not going to be right now. I'm sure he scored in the game when England went 1-0 down to San Marino. Anyway, yeah, 33 caps, Ian Wright. Yeah. Robbie Fowler, 26 caps. Question two. It's 1-1. Yeah, that's fine. Doesn't matter, Tom. Jack, here's your second go, your second bite of the cherry. It's our last England one. It's a battle of the Jamies. Jamie Redknapp or Jamie Vardy?
I'm going to go for... That's really tough, actually. I'm going to just go for Jamie Redknapp.
It's Jamie Vardy on 26 caps. The door has been left open. Jamie Redknapp managed only 17. caps and probably 17 shots from outside the box over the bar. Question two, Peter, France, Kylian Mbappe or Frank Ribery?
That's going to be close, isn't it?
They're both quite high.
Mbappe.
It's Ribery with 81, Mbappe with 75, but he'll obviously overtake that. So we're all on one. Tom, it's your chance to make sure it's a draw and complete waste of time. Tom, it's Germany.
Oh.
Gerd Müller or Jerome Boateng?
Is that a trick question and will it be Jerome Boateng? Yeah, I'm going to go for that.
You're going to go
Jerome Boateng?
It's right, yes. 76. Müller on 62. So it's a draw. Everyone is a winner, and that is how life should be, unless it's the Euros.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Right, our final part then, we should touch on any other potential favourites. Obviously, some of these groups aren't decided, so we can't dive too much into all this, but I think we should probably mention Germany, given Julian Nagelsmann's in charge for short term, and he's been doing some strange things, Tom, like playing Kai Havertz at left back and all sorts of fun. And we don't know if Jurgen Klopp might end up as Germany's boss beyond this, but they've been a massive disappointment in recent tournaments. This isn't the Germany we all knew. What are you expecting from them going into this one?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because there's not been a lot of stability going into this tournament. But as with all of the favourites, really, they do have so many really interesting young players coming through. You look at that kind of, particularly attacking midfield, Jamal Musiala and Florian Wirtz is, wow. Those two are two of the best players in Europe, really, in terms of being able to pick up the ball in the attacking third, being able to make things happen. I was watching Florian Wirtz actually the other day against Karabag in the Europa League, and every time he picks up the ball, he did something. That's going to be interesting. And then they've got Toni Kroos sat behind them. Gundogan has created the most chances of any player in Europe's top five leagues this season. He's been playing a bit further forward for Barcelona in recent weeks as well. Yeah, there's a lot of talent in there. But again, international football decided on single games. And, we've even looking at their group, Hungary have been quite kind of barnstorming in the last couple of competitions and qualifying. Scotland, obviously, steamrolled Spain a couple of months ago. It's one of those where they could either absolutely walk it or get bogged down into a little bit of a battle in that group.
So much experimentation, isn't it, at the moment? And you just, especially with a coach like Julian Nagelsmann, and clearly doesn't have his favourite squad, certainly doesn't have a sort of settled 11. You always wonder when you're making that many changes heading into a tournament, whether you can make it click. I suppose the adage is always, you want it to be like a club, right? You have your ideas and everyone knows what they're doing, but
most people might like the idea of an outside shot at
Spain, Croatia, Italy. Spain, Croatia, and Italy are all in the same group.
Well, that thing is, that's kind of less exciting than it should be because of the 24-team format. If this was the classic 16-team format, then having three good teams in a group would be super exciting. When you've got 24 teams, and obviously, so that means, what, four out of the six third places go through, it's less, there's less of a sense of jeopardy about a group of death. I might have Portugal as being my third favourites behind England and France. I just think, you know, like everybody's obviously got, everybody will have their own opinions about Roberto Martinez, but the quality of players they've got is still really, really good, even with the sort of ageing Ronaldo up front. You know, you look at Bernardo Silva, Ruben Dias, Rafael Leao, tons of players.
Tom, you're going to see Spain in action soon, aren't you?
Yeah, really looking forward to it. They're playing Colombia tonight, who haven't lost in over 2 years, I believe. So that will be actually quite a competitive game. I think they beat Germany as well in the last kind of round of friendly. So, yeah, I mean, with Spain, I think I'm always optimistic about them, and it doesn't always turn out to be, you know, the right thing to do. But I quite like the fact that they've kind of settled into kind of fourth, fifth favourite kind of position, and, you know, not everybody is looking at them as really serious contenders, but I think there's some interesting things going on in that squad. I mean, if we're looking at these internationals, for example, at left back, Jose Luis Gaya and Alejandro Valde are both injured. So Grimaldo comes in, who's had an amazing season for Bayer Leverkusen, 11 goals and 15 assists. There's also Kubar Siv, a young centre-back for Barcelona, 17 years old. He's been thrown straight into the squad. I think that's going to be really interesting to see because, yeah, that game against Napoli, he was really good up against Victor Osimhen. And some of the passes he can kind of launch through a team, it's just unbelievable. So I think he's really exciting too. And then up front, which I think is the biggest change with Spain really in the last couple of years, is that they've always had a kind of possession-based system where the wingers aren't necessarily destructive going forward. They're more kind of will come into the midfield and they'll link up. Now in Lamine Yamal, who's obviously very young, we'll have to see whether he's, you know, thrown in at the deep end. And Nico Williams on the other side, they have wingers who can run at you, who can take you on, who can cut inside and shoot and score a lot more than in previous years. So I do think they have something different about them, on top of that possession game with Rodri and then potentially Gavi and Pedri in the midfield.
Will it still be Alvaro Morata up front?
Probably will be, yeah. He's been quite good this season as well, to be fair. I mean, I think it's his best scoring season now in La Liga for Atletico Madrid. They have Hossolu as a bench option as well, who's been, again, obviously here in England, we didn't see the best of him, but he's effective when he comes onto the pitch. He's got a good aerial presence. He's actually scored twice on his debut, I believe, for Spain, so... Yeah, it's interesting. It's not, you know, it's not, if you're looking at that squad, it's probably not shouting out to you that, you know, favourites, but I do think they have some interesting elements which might take some teams by surprise.
How old is Morata now? Is he 30?
In his 30s, yeah, 32, I reckon. But yeah.
Interesting theme, isn't it? You've got Morata 31, Giroud 37.
I think with Morata as well, I mean, this season, his main strength is his aerial ability, his heading, and he's not really had consistent service this season. I think there's also a really good article on The Athletic by Dermot Corrigan, who talks about he's working with a mindset coach. He's kind of cleared his head a little bit, and he's also just really focusing on himself and really focusing on being in the central areas, and he scored so many headers this season as a result. So yeah, so there's lots going on that team. And Luis de la Fuente, obviously it's no longer Luis Enrique. He's been working basically with the under-19s, the under-23s, under-17s as well, all the way through since about 2013. So a lot of his squad he's actually worked with. So I think there's a lot going on. I think it could be interesting.
I think, like, traditionally people might turn their nose up a bit at having a big team who's managed by someone who doesn't have much of a profile as a coach. But the more that international football gets different from club football, I think it actually makes more sense to have teams managed by someone who has come up through the system. And obviously, you know, Southgate's a bit higher profile because he managed Middlesbrough and he was a fairly famous player. But you can definitely see the parallels between De La Fuente and Southgate. And, that, you know, even like one of the most successful international managers of recent years, Joachim Löw, who again had a bit of a club management career, but ultimately owed his rise to working through the National Association. So even though I think some people will say, oh, who is this bloke who's managing Spain? I've never heard of him as a player. I think that is just the direction that international football's going, and it might turn out that he's kind of more rooted in the job than as like a bigger name import from club football.
Well, we'll have loads more preview content of Euro 2024 as we draw closer to the start date, which is the 14th of June. So make sure you keep an eye on the Athletic app and website. But that is all for today's podcast. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. Io will be back on Monday and we'll be back next Friday as usual. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
The Athletic.